1997. The United States was finally clawing its way out from under the rubble and devastation left in the wake of an economic depression that had ravaged the country for nearly half a decade. The Great Panic of 1893, as it was known, had sent America's economy into an utter tailspin. Triggered by a series of events, including the overbuilding of railroads, agricultural overproduction, a bloated surplus of silver, and the collapse of several major financial institutions, this panic resulted in widespread business failures and mass unemployment. Banks and businesses closed, and the stock market plummeted, causing a ripple effect that devastated communities across the country. But this turmoil and catastrophe would ignite the will, ingenuity, and imaginations of the people. Urbanization exploded as Americans began abandoning their lives in the rural areas and migrating into the cities. Fueled by the sudden influx into the urban areas and various technological advancements, the country's economy shifted significantly toward industrialization. It was a period of profound economic inequality and rapid industrial development, and it would mark the height of the Gilded Age. Simultaneously, discussions around labor rights, racial issues, and women's suffrage would begin to gain momentum. It was truly a time of change and wonder. And it was then, in the early part of 1897, there, in the heartland of this broken but healing country, that impossible technological marvels would seemingly begin to descend from the vast expanse of the night sky above. Mysterious and miraculous craft, ships that sailed on oceans of air, hailing from worlds unknown. And with them came stranger things still. With them came monsters. History is rife with tales of the inexplicable and the unknown. Stories so bizarre, they send the fingers of doubt creeping into the recesses of our very minds. Join us as we investigate.
This week in Creepy History.
Hi, I'm Laura Cram, and welcome to Season 1, Episode 8 of the Creepy Acres Podcast, This Week in Creepy History. And with me, as always, is my wonderful Bigfoot co-host, Sam Squatch. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Laura.
Hey. How is the new year treating you so far, huh?
You know what, Sam? To be honest, it's been a really tough time. The new year started with me filing for...
Laura. Hold on a second. What? Just hold on a second.
Hey, someone's in here. All right.
All right.
Sam.
All right. I am so sorry.
Are you okay? What's going on? What's that sound?
It's nothing. Don't worry about it. Just go on.
All right. Well, like I was saying, it's been a rough few months. Laura. Yes.
Hold on. Just a sec.
Dude, occupado.
All right. Okay. So I am so sorry. Go on.
Sam, is everything okay?
Well, hello. Laura, Sam, it's me, George, the Bishopville Lizard Man.
Hello, George.
Hey, George.
Sorry to intrude like this, huh? I had no idea you guys were recording.
Oh, bullshit. You knew damn well we were in here recording, man.
What? No. How dare you? How could I possibly know that?
Well, for starters, the big light-up sign out in the hallway, it says quiet recording in progress. That should have been a clue right there.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I never saw any sign. Clearly some big studly monster must have just come in and just ripped it clean off the wall like it was nothing. Nothing at all, and then hid it behind a nearby plant. You know, you ask me, you should be careful. They sound really dangerous and probably just really, really cool.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I thought I heard Laura's voice, and I just thought, like, I would just pop my head in and say hello. Hello, Laura. How are you?
You know what? Honestly, I've been better. Like, I was telling Sam, it's been a tough year. Like,
Laura, hold on. Just a sec. Pop your head in. Dude, you broke my door.
No, I nudged it a little, accidentally.
Accidentally? Dude, you kicked it off the hinges.
Yeah, accidentally.
Dude, I heard you back up down the hall. Then I heard you scream, Krav Maga, and then you ran up and Johnny Cage the goddamn door off the hinges.
Accidentally. Shut up. The adults are talking. Laura. Laura. Dear girl, baby.
George.
How's the new year treating you?
Well, George, you know, it's really been a challenge. I mean, I know a lot of people have it worse, but I've just had so many major life changes in such a short period of time. It's just been really,
Laura.
Sam,
hold on. Just a sec. George, you know what I think?
That brushing your teeth is optional?
Oh, my God. You piece of... No. I think you busted in here so you could be on the podcast.
What? No. How dare you, sir? How dare you? What gall? The cheek.
You think for one second that I don't know that it's been you sending us all the messages on all our social media accounts asking, oh, when's George going to be on the pod? Are you guys going to bring George on?
No, that's not me. It's probably just one of my legions and legions of fans. They adore me. I'm the level of Taylor Swift, only more.
Oh, my God. Oh, don't you drag the Swifties into this. Look, mister. Mason and your mom do not qualify as legions.
Let me stop you right there. Okay? First off, one, Mason is a legion unto himself. He's unstoppable, and you will show some goddamn respect.
Yeah, that is true.
Look me in the eyes and understand that. Thank you.
Yes, I do understand.
Two, I don't care about my mom. You can say whatever you want. Yeah, were my feelings hurt that so far you haven't had me on your little audio program, despite the fact that I'm the one person on this staff with actual professional voiceover experience, and might I add an impressive and storied list of credits on IMDb. I mean, it's the free version, and no one has, like, confirmed any of this, but shut up. Just shut up. You know what, Sam? Success, it's just not for everyone. And it scares some people, so they strive for mediocrity, like you. And if that's your goal, my furry little friend, well, mission accomplished. But then again, what could I expect from a guy who thinks banging a stick against a tree and whooping is a suitable means of communication? I mean, come on.
Oh, my God.
Whoop, whoop, whatever.
You're not going to want to get too close. I got a cold sore coming in, so just back up, all right?
George, did you want to be on our podcast?
Hold your tongue, traitorous woman!
Sam, he's your friend. Come on now. George, did you want to be on the pod?
Laura, thank you. You are kind and well-mannered. But I couldn't possibly. Sadly, even though I would love to. I really would. You know, I've taken a vow that I will not perform until my fellow actors in Hollywoodland are given what they are owed and their strike is over.
George, the actor strike is over.
No, I meant the writers. The writers. You know, the real heroes. Let's be honest here. The real heroes of the silver screen and the small screen, like the guys who work for us. What are their names? Deshaun and other guy, Brad.
Is it Jazz?
It's Chad.
Chuck?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
But George, the writer strike is over too.
No shit.
Yeah, it's been over for weeks now.
Months.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. My agent Gary, well, he would have called by now. I mean, yes, yeah, I know. But I am taking the customary time that's appropriate to mourn the passing of the old deal for the new one. I mean, you wouldn't understand. It's a Hollywoodland tradition for Hollywoodland people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Sam, this is sad. Say something.
Okay. Come on, Sam.
Okay. Okay, fine, fine.
Ask me.
George.
Ask me.
Oh my God. God damn it. Do I really?
Come on, you're his friend.
Oh.
Do as you're told, Sam.
Fine, fine. George, would you like to be on the podcast with Laura and I?
I don't know. I suppose I could move some things around, if it helps you.
Oh, lucky us.
Okay, fine. So, what are we discussing? Oh, the Lizard Man of Scape or Swamp? Or maybe the Bishopville Lizard Man? Ooh, or perhaps the Lizard Man of, oh, Lee County?
Aren't those all the same thing?
Oh, Laura. Oh, so attractive. So misinformed. But thank you. It feels so good to laugh. Your soft human brain, oh, couldn't possibly grasp the subtleties or nuance needed to thread that needle. Understandable. But no.
Wow. Well, we're actually talking about the airship flap of 1897. Do you know anything about that?
Oh, sure. I know all about airship flaps and 1897. I just know it so well. I mean, there were airships just in 1897, just flapping around everywhere, just flapping and flapping and ooh, more flapping. And it was just so scary. They'd like land on the ground and just flap around like a dead bat, just smacking the ground and just scaring people.
Flapping. Was there a lot of flapping? Buddy, was there a lot of flapping?
Oh, pop quiz. So, were there any lizard men on these flapping airships?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not a single one.
Oh, well, in that case, bye.
The fuck, he just left. He just left. God damn it. He just walked out.
What do we do?
Good riddance. Don't the door hit you. Oh, you can't. It's off the goddamn hinges.
Yeah. Way to buy a cheap door, dickweed.
You're fixing that goddamn door!
I ain't fixing shit, Burbag.
Oh, you scaly... Oh, no, my guy, he's taking my cat. Hold on. Don't touch my cat! You put the cat down!
I'm taking this cat.
Oh, don't touch the cat.
Okay.
But I'm taking the toilet paper and these chips. I'm getting something out of this debacle. Shopping spree.
Are you gonna go get him?
Why the hell would I go get him? Why would I go get him?
Sam, he's your friend. Go get him, and I'll turn it over to Nathaniel Leonards, and we'll learn about the airships.
If it was anyone else asking me this, I would tell them right to their face to just eat my Okay, you know what? For you. I'll do it for you.
Thank you.
Okay, okay. All right. I will be back.
Okay, I'll be here.
Come here, you scaly bitch.
Transformation was underway in the American Midwest. With the invention of barbed wire, the steel plow, and mechanical reaper, new opportunities for farmers cultivating crops like corn, wheat, and oats exploded across the fertile plains of America's heartland. And with these new opportunities came a flood of European immigrants as well as transplants from other parts of the U.S. The region's cultural diversity flourished as wave after wave after wave of new settlers arrived, all desperately chasing the promise of the American dream. Contributing to the sudden success of the era's farmers was the Transcontinental Railroad, signed into law in 1862 by President Abraham Lincoln himself and completed just 7 years later, in 1869. This marvel of engineering connected the eastern states to the west and cut a path of prosperity across the Midwest. Beginning in Omaha, the Union Pacific Railroad reached ever westward, stretching across the entirety of Nebraska, before continuing on through Wyoming and into Utah, where it would meet the tracks of the Central Pacific Railroad, which had left California and ventured across Nevada. There, at Promontory Summit in Utah, the lines would merge and forever revolutionized transportation and trade in America. And all along this span, new cities and towns would take root and grow. And it was during these miraculous and turbulent times that a series of extraordinary and bizarre sightings would spark awe and terror in hearts and minds across the Midwest. For 6 years before the Wright brothers would take their first flight at Kitty Hawk, the American heartland would be rocked time and time and time again by the appearance of mysterious and impossible aircraft, seemingly from another time. Sunday, January 31st, 1897. It was a chilly winter evening. The night sky stretched out over the seemingly endless plains of the Midwest like a vast, dark shroud, dusted by a dazzling array of stars. But one star in particular stands out. A small but brilliant orb of light that slowly begins to grow ever brighter and brighter and brighter still. But soon, what first appeared merely as just another star in the sky has grown into a spectacular, blinding ball of brilliance. This show did not go unnoticed as citizens of the tiny town of Hastings, Nebraska, watched this cosmic display. But soon, these witnesses staring out into the winter sky would realize that this light wasn't a star at all. In fact, whatever it is only 800 feet off the ground. And then, just like that, it's gone, vanished into the night like a ghost, leaving the witnesses with a story and questions, but nothing more. This would not be the end, for the very next night, it would return. Monday, February 1st, 1897. It was around 9:30 p.m. when a glaring light lit up the sky west of Hastings, Nebraska. This time, however, it wasn't content to merely dazzle with its luminosity. It began to move. The glaring spectacle was now not just being witnessed by those in town, but was seen by people scattered all about Adams County as it began to circle. Around and around and around it traveled before it finally took off toward the north. It had covered nearly 3 miles when it suddenly stopped dead in the air. The bewildered witnesses below watched the spectacle display before them as it seemed to hover there motionless in the freezing night sky. Then, about 5 minutes later, it began to descend. It dropped almost 200 feet from its previous elevation and now rocketed west at incredible speed. It covered 2 miles, seemingly instantly, before it seemed to slow, and then once again, it began to circle. It continued to trace the same path in the sky, closing circuits as it went. For 15 minutes, the light continued to circle inexplicably. Then, the light began to lower, before simply disappearing once again, as mysteriously as it had arrived. Over the next few nights, the people of Hastings, Nebraska were likely gathering outside in the frigid night air, anticipating the return of the bizarre, luminous visitor. And return it did, in spectacular fashion. In fact, this time, the witnesses would not only see the mysterious light, but be given the first glimpse behind its blinding glare. There, they would see something that would forever challenge the very limits of their imaginations and their minds. It would rock their understanding of the world around them. Thursday, February 4th, 1897. 10 to 12 members of a local church had just left their evening prayer meeting when suddenly a brilliant light flashed to life in the sky above. Then the luminous display began to move. Slowly, it would pass directly over the pious gathering, and as they looked up, their eyes were met with a staggering sight. The light wasn't alone. In fact, it appeared as if it had been followed by 6 smaller orbs, which were gathered in pairs and evenly spaced, creating two rows of three. And as they peered up at the endless mystery above, their eyes adjusting to the glare and gloom, their sense of wonder turned to horror and fear as a dark, hulking form slowly took shape behind those lights. It was then they realized the lights were all connected to one massive body. The object, whatever it was flying at a considerable height as it continued on its path past the churchgoers and off into the night. However, 10 minutes later, it would return, passing over the same group as before, but now it hung much lower in the sky. So low, in fact, that those present could not only see, but hear the bizarre and mysterious object above them. What they saw was an impossible machine. It was 30 to 40 feet in length and conical in shape. Bright light that had heralded the arrival of this inexplicable craft was now revealed to be a massive spotlight mounted on its bow. Down each side ran three smaller lights, like portholes. Meanwhile, from its side sprouted two sets of wing-like structures, and from the back emerged a large fan-shaped apparatus that the witnesses assumed to be a rudder. And as the members of that congregation stared up at this miraculous ship of the air, from it emanated a most unexpected sound. The distinct sound of a man laughing. And then it was gone, once again vanishing into the night. Skeptics would claim it was all, perhaps nothing more than the misidentification of kites, balloons, clouds, or even planets. Newspapers would start to ridicule the witnesses, claiming them to be under the influence of alcohol. But to the witnesses, they could only speculate that the craft must be that of a brilliant inventor, testing out a new form of flying machine. For what else could it possibly be? Looking back from our modern age, it would be easy to simply dismiss the stories as mere sightings of dirigibles or blimps. However, that technology was still barely in its infancy, half a world away. And that certainly wouldn't explain what was yet to come. Soon, the sightings were almost daily and being reported miles apart. Within a week, it would be seen again, but this time 60 miles to the east, over York, Nebraska, where it would be witnessed over several nights. But now, it would be sporting a giant red light. On Thursday, February 11th, George S. Cook and G.H. Jerome would spot the mysterious craft around 9 p.m., 2 to 3 miles west of York, Nebraska, once again appearing as a brilliant point of light in the sky, like an arc welder's flame. It hung motionless against the night before suddenly shooting away at incredible speed. Now it was zigzagging impossibly to the north and the south before ultimately heading northwest and disappearing into the gloom. Friday, February 12th, the mayor of Niobrara, Nebraska, and a court clerk would see the mysterious light around 10:30 p.m. It would be spotted, veering about, zigzagging in the sky, and circling once again. But this time, the brilliant light was a flurry of alternating colors. On Monday, February 15th, it would be spotted again, this time by four men, Charlie Dempster, Will Miller, Wallace Scott, and Frank Talbot, around 10:30 at night over Beatrice, Nebraska, nearly 100 miles east of where the first reports had come in near Hastings. Tuesday, February 16th, Thomas Hazel, an employee of the Hammond Packing Company, and his wife were entertaining a couple dozen of their children's young friends when one little girl, the daughter of the Kentner family, left the house and headed out to the yard. Immediately, the child called for the others to come see what she called the funny thing in the sky. Soon, those in attendance had gathered outside and beheld what Mr. Hazel would describe as a long, dark object 400 to 500 feet in the air, moving through the sky and headed north. It seemed to be illuminated by various spotlights mounted about it. These lights seemed to move up and down and all around, and when they would focus their beams forward, it was impossible to see the body of the hulking object they were all connected to. By now, the neighbors of the Hazel family had also ventured outside to see what was all the commotion. They would watch the craft as it continued on its northern journey and eventually vanished into the darkened night. Wednesday, February 17th, it would be seen again between 9 and 10 p.m., 50 miles west of Hastings, near Kearney, Nebraska. This time, by Charlie Prescott, a city clerk who was walking home. Again, again, and again, the people of Nebraska would report sightings of this mysterious ship of the air as it would continue traversing about the skies over the Cornhusker State. But these tales were merely the beginning. They would pale in comparison to what would follow in the months to come. Tales that would defy imagination and reason. Now it was being reported nearly every night. And no longer content with the skies of just Nebraska, by late March it was appearing over other states like Iowa, Kansas, Colorado, and even Michigan. By April, the reports were too numerous to count. Reports were flooding in from other states as well. Illinois, Indiana, Minnesota, Missouri, Wisconsin, Ohio, Oklahoma, Texas, and West Virginia. Soon, they were being reported as far away as Canada. But always, they came back to Nebraska. As these sightings grew more numerous, so too did they grow in their strangeness. For soon, the airships would descend to the earth and land among those who had speculated about them for so long, and the occupants of these ships would prove to be far stranger than the crafts themselves. Human on the surface, but their peculiar mannerisms and odd actions were almost alien in every way. It started simply as mysterious, unexplained lights in the sky were now accompanied by theories of extraterrestrials and entities from other realities. And stranger still, the appearance of these impossible craft were soon joined by bizarre tales of hideous wild men and giant black panthers. As if the very arrival of these airships had ripped open a doorway from another reality. A reality populated by monsters. Monsters that would occasionally tumble through into our world. Whether misidentification, hoax, crazed inventors, or some sort of unknown phenomenon, these seemingly technological wonders rest at the intersection of technological progress, public curiosity, and the enduring human fascination with the unknown. Whatever the Nebraska Mystery Airships of 1897 were, they will forever remain a notable page in the history of UFOs and the history of Nebraska.
Sam, well, what'd you think about that?
I gotta say, it was it's so weird. I mean, like, all those weird
signs,
I mean, like, not just the airship, but all the other crap going on around. I mean, like,
yeah.
I mean, the fact that they had, like, Black Panther sightings and then, like, the wild men sightings, because we know that's just code for Bigfoot sightings. We know that.
Yeah, I think we know.
Right. But weirdly enough, no lizard man. That's weird, huh?
Not a single one.
George, isn't that weird? Isn't that weird?
George, I'm glad you're back.
Yeah, me too.
Me too. Me
wouldn't,
three.
Wouldn't miss it.
I'm enjoying this, watching him.
Yeah, airships. Awesome. Awesome.
All right, well, let's just get to our guests.
Oh, yeah. So who's the guest? Who is it?
It is Steve Berg.
Oh, my God. The guy from the High Strangeness podcast?
You know who he is?
Oh, yes. That is like one of my favorite. That thing is so good.
Wait, shut. Steve Berg?
Yeah, Steve Berg. He's an actor. He's a podcaster.
The Steve Berg? From television and movies, Steve Berg?
Yeah.
From like Drunk History and stuff?
Yeah.
No, I just know him from his podcast. I didn't know about
movies. Hey. That's cool. Huh? Is he here?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah, we're interviewing him, yeah.
Dude, can I maybe give him like my headshot? And I wrote a script.
I don't know if he has the time.
It's a man and a monkey, but I could retool it to make a lizard man.
Look, I don't know him.
He's got to know somebody.
Yeah, we don't know him that well.
No, but that's how you make friends, is you take a chance.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's so sudden.
Dang.
I don't know.
Sam, look at me.
Yeah.
I need this.
I can't look at you because I don't know which eye I'm supposed to look at. They're going different directions.
Look at the bridge of my face. Sam,
okay. Yeah.
I need this.
Oh, Sam, have a heart.
Sam,
for real. All bullshit aside.
Yeah.
I need this. Help me, Sam. I need this.
You guys are friends. Come on, Sam.
Look, I'm gonna say right now, that's very rare that we have this moment of genuine connection.
Yeah.
And I, right now, want to take this moment and say, in your fucking face! Oh, my God! Oh, the power! Oh, I love it! Oh, I can't get it up. Yeah, what is this going to...
I can appreciate how our regular dynamic would...
Oh, yeah. I feel like Kim Jong-un, make the power, feel happy, Iron Fist.
I need you to not be you right now.
No. I'm really liking this. Sam. You know, look, I don't know, but I'm feeling like this feels right, this amount of power I got. I kind of like it. It kind of feels good.
Sam.
Yeah.
You have a real choice to make right now.
Yeah.
You can help a friend.
Oh, help a friend.
Or you can make the biggest mistake of your life. I will give the Mothman your new phone number.
You would not dare.
I've got at least 7 screenplays, 3 of them written as a buddy picture and a Bishopville Lizardman. Frogman's got a movie coming out. Now is the time to strike.
Who's in that Frogman movie?
The Frogman. That's all that matters.
The Frogman, and no one else matters. I just like that I finally have something over on you. It fills me with warmth.
This is me being vulnerable.
Yeah.
I need this.
I like this. I like this, George. I do.
George.
Yes.
Why don't you go get your headshots, get your resume. Go get them. Come back. We'll wait for you.
Thank you. I'm going to go do that. If you think it's a good idea, I will totally do it. Sam, eat a bag of dicks.
Ouch.
Laura, you're the best. I'll be right back. Just wait.
Have you ever read one of his goddamn scripts? Have you?
No.
Do you know how many of them revolve around a lizard man? All of them.
Oh.
Goddamn all of them.
I didn't know that.
Every one of them's about a lizard man. Yeah. He just rips off Hollywood blockbusters and puts a lizard man in them. And they're all named George. Huh? That's weird. He Tony Danza that shit. And then gives them oh such clever names. They're all basically lizard puns, okay? They're all like Iguana Holds Your Hand or Scales of Justice or The Litigator.
Lizards of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
Lizard of Arabia.
Exactly. Shit like that.
He's your friend. How am I supposed to know?
You know what? Fine. This is on you. It's on you. It's on you, Cram. It's on you.
All right, well, let's...
I can hear him rummaging around the other room. Oh, he's giggling. Oh, Christ.
I'm sorry. I didn't know. All right, let's just hurry up and talk to Steve Berg, who is an actor and podcaster. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me, folks.
Oh, my God. Hey, how you doing, Steve?
What's up, Sam? Nice to finally meet you.
We met in Van Meter.
I met a guy named Sean. I've never met Sam, though.
Oh, that fat bastard. He takes all... Look, that's not me.
That's not...
That's the guy who pays the bills. He's nobody. Just pay attention to him.
Sean was great, but I've never met Sam. Yeah, he said he couldn't make it to Van Meter.
He's a liar. I was there. Because I'll tell you what, he does that all the time. I'm going to tell you right now. That guy, yeah, he seems nice. Take a car ride with him sometime. He does nothing but fart the whole time. It's gross.
He gave me cool stickers. I liked him. I thought he was great.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll do that. He'll buy his way into your heart.
Sean's not so bad, Sam.
Yeah, he foots the bill. He lets me live here for free. That's all I can ask. All right.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So, Steve, tell us about your podcast. What is it called?
It is called Hi Strangeness, H-I comma Strangeness, like I'm saying hello to Strangeness. It is a show where I talk about 40 and high strange topics such as UFOs, ghosts, paranormal, apports, weird American history, the occult, all kinds of fun stuff, you know, and I like to try to have authors on if I can, and some other podcast people, but I try to interview researchers who I've always wanted to talk to. This is just an excuse for me to talk to people I've, you know, like wanted to talk to for a long time. So that's the whole point of the podcast for me.
That's fantastic.
It is.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yes, I love it.
Yeah.
It's all about connections.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Thanks, bud.
So, Steve, I just want to know, has there ever been a time on your podcast where, say, like, there's some author or researcher whose just work is just phenomenal, like, you just love it, it's just on, like, a whole nother level, they think in ways you couldn't even possibly comprehend, and they're just mind-boggling, and you get them there to talk to them on your podcast, and you realize, you know, this guy, they might be nuts, you know? Has that ever happened to you?
Not yet. I have a pretty high like threshold for nuts.
That's what she said. Go on.
And weird. So, okay. I think maybe I've sort of had maybe a minor personal connection to a lot of people I've had on. So I've kind of chosen people specifically because I find their work very like credible and pushing the ball forward in the high strange field. So.
Oh, that's very cool.
But I'm open to having people who are nuts.
Strangers.
Yes.
Strangers that are nuts.
Exactly.
Okay, so like you haven't had to get like a restraining order or like change your phone number or any of that kind of stuff? Nothing like that?
No, not really. Everyone's been really friendly. And I feel like nearly every time I've had someone on my show, we kind of become friends afterwards.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm always trying to build bridges, Sam.
And you know what, Steve? I appreciate that. I really do. You know what? It's a good quality to have. That. Well, and that said, let me just say, the reason why I'm asking you these questions, okay, is simply this. There is a certain stereotype that goes with people who believe in this sort of stuff, the esoteric, you know, the ghosts, the UFOs, you know, the high strangeness, you know, that they're all crazy, that they're all nuts. You know, and yet here we sit, you and us, who have interviewed numerous people on these subjects, okay? And I will readily admit, I have met some goofballs. I have met some cards. I've met some cut-ups. I've met some characters, if you will, all right? But what I haven't met is anyone I would say was nuts, you know? So this brings me to my second point, which is simply this. I want you to be my buddy, Steve, all right? I want you to be my friend. So bad. Are we going to be friends, Steve?
That's to be determined.
Are we going
to
be buddies?
Sean and I are friends. I mean, like, I love Sean. You, I'm not sure about
that. Oh, that long-haired chubby son of a bitch. He screws me at every corner, Steve. Okay.
We're going
to
burn
I'm
gonna that
do
bridge.
My best. I'm going to do my best to win you over, Steve. I'm going to do my best.
Okay.
I will kiss your ass to be your friend.
Well, I will do no ass kissing, but...
Laura and I are already buddies.
Yeah.
We are.
She's good like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A highly likable human being.
Aw, nice. Yes.
Yeah, you don't have to kiss her ass. You're already on the show, man. It's fine.
Well, I mean, you know, it's more like...
All right, no more screwing around. Here we go.
Okay, so our topic today is the airships of the late 1890s. Right, Sam?
Yeah, we're going to have to turn this over to Steve because he's going to be the expert on this because I'll tell you right now, if it comes to cryptids, like, I'm your guy, but this stuff, good Lord.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is beyond me. He's going to have to take it. Take the wheel, man.
Okay, I will happily take the wheel. So, the flying airship wave was kind of, obviously, it is what it sounds like. It was a wave of people seeing kind of different type craft, oblong craft, cigar-shaped, and some were just lights. Some were even, like, kind of wooden ships. But mostly, I think people were seeing kind of the oblong...
like a Zeppelin-looking...
Yeah, like a submarine kind of looking thing, you know, like a blimp. Exactly. But these things were reported to move erratically, kind of like the modern UFO does. Sometimes it was, like, a light way off, and they would come close at a fast distance, or a very fast pace. But there is a ton of odd things that kind of coincided with the flying airship wave of the late 1800s. And I guess first off, just like a little history, it was kind of, I think it started off being seen in the Bay Area, or some of the earliest cases I have come across in terms of that era. But then it really seemed to be sort of concentrated in the Midwest, in the greater Midwest. In Illinois, there was a ton of sightings, tons in Ohio, Michigan, a lot in Nebraska, where I'm from, Kansas, Iowa, Missouri. But those states seem to really have the most documentation of airships. And a lot of historical societies, there's one case that I'm very fond of just because I was born and raised in Omaha, Nebraska. But in 1897, there was a mass sighting of one of these where they say between 500 and 600 people in downtown Omaha saw one of these kind of cigar-shaped crafts with like headlights on it. And I actually...
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's so many people.
So many. That's a very big mass sighting. In fact, maybe the biggest sighting that I know of, and other than like, well, the Fatima case happened a little, you know, 10-ish years later. But the Phoenix Lights, I mean, in terms of like American UFO sightings, I mean, I can't think of one that had that many. Mm-hmm. But you could even, I mean, you could find it. It's in the Omaha Historical Society. Like, they have a big write-up about it. Like, I actually went and talked to someone about it and saw, like, the write-up, and they gave me a copy, and it's quite amazing. Like, there was actually a fair amount of detail. So, yeah, this was really just kind of going off in that era in the Midwest. But some of the things that are super interesting, some of the, like, high strange paranormal things that kind of coincide with it is really the most interesting part to me. And that is that in that era, you started hearing about these 6-foot-tall, gorilla-looking wild men.
Go on.
And that was kind of being seen all over Pennsylvania.
Like Sam.
I didn't want to say it, but since you did, yes, exactly like Sam. But, you know, this is even, in fact, in Nebraska, kind of this area where I tend to do a lot of my research, which is in eastern Nebraska, in Odo County. There was multiple cases. In fact, one of them, I saw the mayor was hiring like men to go out and try to find this wild man. And along with wild men, there was also a ton of Black Panther sightings.
Hmm.
And Black Panther sightings tend to be associated with, you know, paranormal activity. So it is kind of one of those things where, like, just like in Point Pleasant in the 1960s and, you know, in Western Pennsylvania in the early 1970s, and also a lot of other places. These are just two examples. People were having a multitude of different manifestations of high strangeness. There was a UFO flaps in both those places. And, you know, in the case of Point Pleasant, there was Mothman.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But in Pennsylvania, at the same time, there was Bigfoot sightings, and people would see landed UFOs, and then Bigfoot would be hanging out around there. So, you know, like, it's interesting. So when you see that the wild man was first kind of, I don't know that many cases that go earlier than that era. And there definitely probably is, but I just don't know what they are.
Okay.
But that the wild man and Black Panthers, that sort of phenomenon kind of coincided with the airship wave and were being seen in the areas where the airships were showing up.
Now, did they see a wild man hanging from one of these airships? That would have been cool.
Oh my God. Yeah, that would be cool. Just hanging off the side of it, like on a rope, just Jackie Channing it. Yeah.
And some of the occupants actually kind of parallel, almost seem like a precursor to the Men in Black.
The pilots?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. The occupants of these craft. And so, like, there was a case where I think it was in Texas where they reported these guys with slick back hair and, like, smoked glasses. And that sounds like the Men in Black from the 1950s.
Yeah.
And also just, like, they were always asking people to run errands for them.
Like, go pick up my dry cleaning or what? Pick up some milk?
Like, which is, they would give them, like, a $10 bill, which was a ton of money back then, and say, hey, we need, like, a bucket of water, you know, some, like, hamburger meat, and just, like, knickknacks.
A loaf of bread, a carton of milk, and a stick of butter. A loaf of bread, a carton of milk, and a stick of butter.
And they say, all right, thank you very much. We have to go fight a war in Cuba. And they would say very odd things like that. Or sometimes they would ask someone, like, what time is it? And they say, it's 2:40 p.m. in the afternoon. They say, no, it's not. It's 11 a.m. See you. They would take off. You know, so it's like there is such an absurd quality, just like you find with, you know, UFOs of the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and current day.
Well, I was going to say, and what you had mentioned, the Bigfoot UFO, Pennsylvania, I believe that's the Fayette County.
Exactly.
Yes. Where it's the giant ball of light.
Yep.
On the ground the two. Look, I'll tell you right now, you call them Bigfoot. That's fine. They're alien Bigfoot. I do not claim them as my own, but that's fine.
No, wait, that's so tell me more about this.
Well, that's exactly an example. There's more in that exact area. There was other UFO, Bigfoot related stuff, and there's other ones. But that is a wonderful example, Sam, where in 1971, I have the book Silent Invasion on my shelf. I could go grab it, but I go believe it was 1970. It will take me a while to file through it. That's a bad podcast. Yeah. Dead air. Regardless, it was, I believe, 1971, could have been 72. There was a group of kids, like teenagers, who saw this like red glowing kind of like, you know, oblong shape, you know, circular red orb that was like hanging out, going really slowly over them. And then they see that it lands in a field. And so they go, some of them go home, and then another boy grabs a gun and goes out with his friend, and they go check it out, and they see this craft sitting by a barn and it's in this kind of farm field. And so I'll kind of like, you know, paraphrase and jump to cut to the chase. Lo and behold, they see this craft there, and they look off to the left on this fence line, and they see two like 8 foot tall, Bigfooty type like creatures with like glowing green eyes. The boy actually shoots a tracer round at it, and it kind of dodges like in slow-mo.
Oh, like Matrix? Yes.
And then, you know, they end up turning around, walking away. And when they look, the UFO is gone. But the UFO actually left a glow for when the cops came. They said there was this red glow that they could actually put out so much light that they could read the newspaper.
And like off of the grass?
Off the grass, because the grass, there was like this light residue that like stayed.
Weird.
Yeah. And the kid who kind of like was most impacted by this, the who shot at the Bigfoot creature, ended up having like
all traumatized.
Yes, he was traumatized. One, he wore like had a really like strong glasses prescription, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden he could see perfectly.
Oh,
he could call out to birds and they would like land on his shoulder. He had like these prophetic visions and was like predicting like the, you know, wow. Like, I mean, I don't know if he was like 100%, but he had predicted some things, but like there was a bunch of like weird stuff that happened to him, which is the case for so many people who have this UFO experience. So
I need to see one of these. I want to be a Disney princess and have birds fly on me. And
wouldn't that be amazing?
I don't need contacts anymore.
Free LASIK.
That'd be great.
I know. Agree.
It's like contact with the divine.
Yeah. So that's kind of like, you know, that's like the stuff I love about the flying airship case is that just, I think when I first read about it, like years ago, it seemed pretty much like it was just about the craft, which is very cool because, I mean, there was flying dirigibles and hot air balloons back then, but like not really like, I don't think they were having cigar shaped crafts that could like, fly, you know, like that seems not, I mean, unless there's like a breakaway civilization that I don't know about, it seems like it's kind of something that's high strange. But what I didn't really realize until kind of recently, actually this researcher who's fabulous named Zelia Edgar from Wisconsin, she's wildly intelligent. I've like just a super big fan of her work. She did like a really great exhaustive look, a three-part series into the flying airship wave. And it's pretty much the best thing on the airships I've ever seen. But what she pointed out really was how it coincided with cryptids and monsters and other paranormal activity. And that is really exciting to me.
So what you're saying is we should have had her on the show instead of you.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. She's way smarter than me.
Yeah. You win some, you lose some.
Yeah.
Yeah. She said no.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. She turned
us.
Yeah. She turned us down. So yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's on vacation, but so, yeah, that's good. No. This is good. Hey, you know what? You still work out perfectly for this because these sightings happened in California, but also Nebraska.
Yeah.
You're from both. And as far as I'm concerned at this point, you're part of this, goddamn. You have something to do with this.
Well, I don't not have something to do with this. I'll say that.
Oh.
All right. I'll take that.
I want to know more about these black cat sightings.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, these things, you know, especially in this era, we're seeing all over the place. Mm-hmm. Illinois, Ohio, eastern Nebraska.
Now, were people just saying, was the excuse, you know, like a circus train or the circus was in town or something?
Look, I gotta say, you know, from all these stories, the most dangerous job in the world, apparently at that time, was circus train conductor because they couldn't keep those goddamn things on the tracks to save their life. I mean, they're just falling off willy-nilly at this point, you know?
I, You know, I don't know, other than just kind of the testimonial or the stories I found in old newspapers and that other people have like found and put in their books, I don't really recall like what people were hypothesizing on what it was exactly. I mean, I think a lot of people were like, oh, they're melanistic mountain lions, you know, but I don't know. To my knowledge, I feel like they have not actually found a melanistic, like in a mountain lion with, you know, dark, you know, black fur.
That is 100% correct.
Right. They have not. I mean, people say that a lot, but then I think I read that like it could be, but we've never discovered one. So that's almost weirder,
yeah.
You know, like,
mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I know that, you know, they have these sightings in England, a lot in the UK, especially in a lot of areas where a lot of the fairy lore took place, and like in Cornwall and the Isle of Penzance, I think. They have these reports going way back, and that actually happens to be areas where super weird stuff has happened.
Yeah.
So they definitely, you know, a lot of writers like Jenny Randles and I'm so bad with names. I can't think of it right now. There's a book called The Goblin Universe, and they discuss a lot of this stuff.
Sam, do you know what that book is?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I know it well. That is, oh God, what's his name? Ted Holliday and Colin Wilson.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, I've never read it.
The term's great, and the cover of the book is unbelievably cool. It's a hard one to find. I actually had to read a PDF.
Yeah, that's why I haven't read it. It's a hard one to get your hands on.
Very hard to find, yeah.
Something to look for.
It's a white whale for me.
And the term, the Goblin Universe, I've heard that quite a bit in recent years. I know my friend Alex on her podcast, Crypt Tidbits, shout out to Crypt Tidbits and Alex, but that's the first place I ever heard that term. Because like every episode they'd say, this week on our trip through the Goblin Universe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, why is it so hard to find?
I mean, a lot of these old paranormal books and Fortean books are because they'd never lived past the first printing. So there may have only been like, you know, 1,200 copies ever printed. I mean, you know, a lot of these paranormal books were written by very small publishing companies that went out of business 6 months later. So some of these books, I mean, like, you know, I always tell people, hold on to your UFO and paranormal books because they actually might be worth something, especially if it's the first printing.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting on gold.
Yeah.
Like baseball cards or comic books.
There you go.
I just scored a copy of In the Wake of Sea Serpents, which is a hardcover that I found at a Half Price Books. I was very excited.
Who wrote that? I haven't heard of it.
Bernard Hoovelman.
Ooh, man, that sounds phenomenal.
For those of you listening now who may not know, Bernard Hoovelman published a book way back in like 58, 59, something like that, called On the Track of Unknown Animals, okay? And so he was one of the forefathers of like modern cryptozoology, okay? And that book, like this book, In the Wake of Sea Serpents, it's a big goddamn book. It's like Stephen King, the Stan uncut, unedited big, you know, like you could put it in a pillowcase and you could just beat someone to death with it. It's such a big book.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. You want to use a Fortean book for violence, Sam.
You don't know him that well.
To be fair, I would use anything for violence. It's like my favorite thing, Steve. It's my favorite thing, you know? And if it helps me get my point across, it's no holes barred, baby.
Okay, fair enough, Sam.
Calm down.
Sorry.
Rein him in, Laura, rein him in.
So what do you think that these were? A time slip? Was it really just some crazy inventor guy that just wasn't ready to go public with these? Something else?
I think it could be a lot of... I don't think it's necessarily one thing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I think it could be a multitude of things, but I do... I can't help to look at it through the framework of like a John Keel or a Jacques Vallée, where if you look back in antiquity and into history 1,000 years ago, there was UFO reports. Mm-hmm. But the framework and the societal cultural framework back then, just they didn't have the, you know, the words of like extraterrestrial from another planet, or how we kind of see it today, interdimensional, whatever, you know, like they would frame it as religious experiences. Or, I mean, like if you look back and even like, I think it was like, gosh, some famous battle lord, edgelord was talking about, they would talk about these flying shields, orange flying shields that they would see in the sky. So the UFO phenomenon, I believe, has been around for a long time, but it manifests itself in different ways in different eras and under cultural framework. So like the Fatima case, where like, 30,000 witnesses saw this giant orange ball in the sky? Well, because that was like a predominantly Catholic area and they were super uber religious, they framed it as the Virgin Mary. But if that happened in Times Square in 2023, it would be called a UFO sighting.
Right.
So I just think this stuff has been around for a long time and it changes as we evolve. So I think probably back in the 1890s, it just wanted to show itself as something that was not too far away from where we were technologically, mm-hmm. but still amazing to us and made us think and made us, you know, like, I don't know, dream in a way. Because if you even look at how UFOs in the 20th century played out, you know, people like to think that the UFO problem began with Kenneth Arnold in 1947, and it did in popular culture, but it started out where he said, I saw like 8 delta-shaped crafts that skipped across the air like a saucer. The reporter just thought it was easier to call it a flying saucer, but that's not what he saw, you know, and which is interesting. And then, lo and behold, a week later, everyone in the country and the world is seeing flying saucers. And so then we have the flying saucers until like the early 80s. Then, you know, it starts becoming like big black triangles. Mm-hmm. Well, those were around for a little bit. Then it becomes orange balls of light. Orange balls are around for a little bit. And then it becomes Tic Tacs and so on and so forth. So this phenomenon is never the same. It's constantly changing. It's very self-negating. Just when you think it's one thing, you learn like, oh, I don't know mm-hmm. anything. So it's like always 10 steps ahead.
I love it. That was a good answer.
Yeah.
Bravo.
Thanks.
And the description of the original airship sighting, the one that over California, now, is that the one that they described as it looked like 3 lights? It's coming over them. And then as they look up, they realize there's something black, like that they realize they're all part of the same thing. Because
I'm not sure which California. I mean, there's a ton of different sightings in California, so I'm not sure which one you're referring to.
Well, that's the only part that I remember was that it was like 3 separate lights. They start coming over the people. They're looking up, seeing it, and then they realize, like, because it's night, then they realize, mm-hmm. oh, there's a shape connecting these. It's all one thing. And the only reason I brought that up is because that sounds almost identical to the Phoenix Lights. What happened in that situation?
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. No, it's interesting. I mean, like, this stuff changes, but it's always the same in a mm-hmm. way. You know, it's just like, sometimes you have to wonder, are these just projections we're seeing that, you know, can have mass? You know, and like, kind of how Carl Jung saw this, the UFO, he got really into UFOs at the end of his life and even wrote a long essay, which was turned into a book, which I believe everyone should read. But he kind of said that UFOs are like 99% psychoid, meaning that they're immaterial, but they can leave like traces of material evidence, such as burn mm-hmm. marks and, you know, landing, so it's hard to wrap your mind around because it's very mind bending stuff. It's really for smarter people than myself to kind of tackle these ideas. But I think it's an interesting thing to think about.
So are we starting to approach things like tulpas at this point, like thought forms? Is that kind of where we're going with this? Potentially?
I guess not. That's not really what I feel like I was trying to get at that. I mean, I'm definitely interested in egregores and tulpas and thought forms and, you know, collective unconscious creating like stuff from our sea of archetypes. I think there's absolutely something to that. And that may actually be what the paranormal represents, but I just don't know. I mean, like, it's so hard to say, you know, like if you ask me tomorrow, I'll say something totally different. That's the wonderful thing about like Fortiana and High Strange and the paranormal is that I feel like once you've fixed your beliefs in this stuff, then you've stopped learning. So to me, it's like, I believe in nothing. While I think there's something definitely to mm-hmm. all of this, I bet no one's guessed what it actually is. I don't think we'll ever know. I really don't. I don't think anyone will ever know.
Now, on the airship sightings themselves, so the description of the airships change repeatedly as time goes on.
Yeah, and just like UFOs. Yep.
Just like UFOs. So my question is, at the time, they were thinking, you know, the answer was always that, oh, well, these are just, it's some inventor who hasn't let this thing out yet, whatever.
Yeah.
So are we seeing potentially just different,
like different variations of the experiment as he's working on it, and that's why I keep changing. Or do you think we're looking at, because different people are seeing it, that this thing appears differently to different people because it's not tangible?
I
have a hard time buying that there was just like a couple people doing it.
They've got to be worldwide.
It was kind of worldwide. So, even if you just take the United States, it was hard to traverse long distances. And these sightings were happening the same day in different states. And they are pretty drastically different in appearance. So while I do think, sure, there could have been an inventor who had like some, flying airship thing. I mean, maybe, I don't know. But I do think there's just too much weird stuff about it that it doesn't feel like it's it's like Bigfoot. I feel like when I was a little kid, I thought Bigfoot was one creature mm-hmm. who just got around, man. he was skipping around this country. But no, I feel like if there is a Bigfoot phenomenon, it's a multitude of these, creatures. And I feel like the same applies to the airship, where I don't think it was one or a few or a dozen. I think it was many, many things. Or it's all this testimony is just completely fake. We'll never know, I suppose. But I would, to me, my opinion is just doing the research I have and reading about it, I think it seems like it was.
People saw something. I mean, you can't have 500 people not.
Yeah. That case. Yeah. I don't know how you hoax that. It's too hard to get 500 people to agree that the sky is blue, right? especially nowadays. So I don't, to me, it just seems like this was kind of a widespread thing that people were seeing it virtually the same day in states that were, hundreds of miles away from each other. So it does feel like it was more than a couple people up to shenanigans.
And we might be dealing here with a situation where there was a couple of real things happening, and then other newspapers saw these stories and wanted to jump in on it.
Yeah, sure.
And now you have fake stuff mixed with real stuff, and now we can't peel them apart because mm-hmm. now they're so intertwined.
Yeah, and that's the self-negating part about UFOs. It really is. And if you think about it, I think a lot of even famous UFO sightings are potentially, military hardware that we don't know about yet. They always say that old adage, whatever you see in the sky, we have something that's 20 years ahead of it.
Oh, sure.
In terms of the military. So I think a lot of high strange stuff could be probably ruled out with boring terrestrial mundane origins. However, I do think a lot of it is truly weird, And there is I do wonder sometimes if the phenomenon or whatever you want to call it does mimic our own tech or our own kind of archetypes and gives us what we want to see. And sometimes we'll give you something really weird. There's multiple cases of people seeing a UFO and then all of a sudden it changes into an orbital light. Then it changes into a black helicopter. Then it changes into a triangle. Then it turns into a cloud and drifts away. If you read John Keel books, there's multiple cases of UFOs before people's very eyes changing into three or four different things.
Oh my God.
So yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So to kind of think that it's aliens from the planet, that seems so far fetched to me that I don't see a single bit of evidence that could possibly be that. Now, maybe somewhere along, Earth's history, we have been visited by aliens from another planet, but I don't think it explains the larger portion of what the UFO phenomenon is.
I mean, you could potentially be, look, I'm going to put my nerd hat on here for a second.
Yeah, please.
I mean, we potentially what you could be looking at here is perhaps they're not extraterrestrial. Maybe they're ultra terrestrial. They're mm-hmm. From another reality, whatever.
Yeah.
And maybe what we're seeing is, even if they're they're explorers from somewhere else, they end up here and this is their cloaking whatever, and they're kind of we got to blend in. They're like, well, this is they're not gonna know this is close enough.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they do a blimp kind of thing.
Yeah.
But they don't realize we're not quite there yet.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then they're like they're just dumb humans. They're not gonna know the difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, man. I think you're totally onto something there. I totally agree. I think it does seem like they only the way the stuff evolves where it's you could imagine maybe in 30 years from now, we would have maybe something like a flying saucer. and it could do amazing like maneuvers and stuff like that. That's not that other realm possibility for 30 years down the line. So it always just seemed like it's just like a few steps ahead of us.
Yeah.
But now when you talk about, you know, the encounters with the occupants of UFOs and airships, that's where it really gets interesting to me. Like, I love, you know, the crafts and stuff. They're really neat. But I'm more interested in the interactions between non-human intelligence and human beings. Like, if you look at the 1960s and the 1970s, for instance, there was like 1,000 different, like, you know, creatures they were seeing come off these crafts. Michelin men, like little tin cans, you know, like 10-foot tall, like dragon-looking monsters, gray aliens. I mean, it was all over the place. And so when people say, it's aliens from another planet. Well, I'm like, what? We're like 1,000 different species coming to visit us? You know, like, it just seems really, like, it seems hard to believe, you know? And, like, I know, like, you know, we all love our ideas and get married to them. But, like, I feel like, man, it's, you know, with this stuff, you really have to be kind of fluid. And always, like, when you hear new information, add that to your own hypothesis and be willing to change it constantly. Because the more I learn, the less I know and the more questions I have.
I ain't gonna lie. You know, all I can picture now is, you know, those stories of like when Native Americans put like a wolf pelt on and they like crawl up to like get a look at the buffalo herd, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like it's like that. And like, this sort of airship facade is the wolf pelt.
Yeah.
And like you guys, humans, you're like the herd. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. Well, there is like a very trickster and deceptive quality to this stuff. You know, it is, and these things tell you they're one thing, and then they will turn around and tell you they're something else. It's like, I don't think they're necessarily malevolent or benevolent. I don't think they care, you know, like in a lot of ways, because they haven't shown that they've cared.
Right.
Like, if they had all these abilities, then they would potentially maybe help us out if they were, like, you know, these sweetheart entities. But they also haven't showed us, I mean, like, aside from, you know, there are cases where people have been harmed by UFOs, like in Brazil, like there's a lot of cases of the Chupa crafts like hurting people and like giving radiation burns and whatnot. But for the most part, they don't seem to really like, you know, have it in for us as far as I can tell.
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood, baby.
Because they're still trying to find our weaknesses.
Exactly.
Which, by the way, is not that hard to do.
No.
I mean, seriously, you guys, like humans, You like, you could be taken out with anything even remotely sharp. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you have the same weakness as a kid's birthday balloon, okay? And that's just one. There's so many.
Yeah, take our internet away, we would collapse, you know, like
instantly.
That's it.
Instantly.
All right.
There is just so much to this story. Like, we're talking 2 years of sightings.
Yeah. Intense years too.
Like a solid month where it was like almost daily.
Yeah. Well, and them just being all different.
Right. So then you have all that, all the wild man sightings, which is just code for Bigfoot. We all know that. But then you have like the Black Panther sightings and the weird like occupant sightings. They're sort of like Men in Black kind of stuff. You have all that crap on top of it.
Yes.
All the weird shit. Sometimes it's just a light in the sky.
I know.
Like an orb. And sometimes it's a ship with propellers.
Yep.
And it is just madness. It's all over the place. And it went on for years even after the flap. Because, I mean, would you say it went to like 1903 or something like that?
The airship flap was 97 through 99.
But then there were still more.
Yeah, it didn't like stop cold. It definitely like, I mean, people were seeing shit in the skies all the way up to Kenneth Arnold. You know,
like,
so, you know, it really, like, it's funny. I mean, like, I know of like some great cases in Nebraska from the 1920s.
Ooh.
So, I mean, you know, yeah. but I mean, like, and yeah, I could tell that story, you know, and it's wackadoo.
Let's hear it.
I want to hear wackadoo.
So either 1920 or 1922, a guy in Hubble, Nebraska, and now I can't remember the guy's name. He was a hunter, and he was hunting at like around this creek, which is now a wildlife management area, because I like obsessively look at it on Google Earth. I do that with high strangers places. I go to Google Earth and I type in like as close as I can get, I just stare at it. I'm like, whoa.
this isn't near you at all?
Hubble is not. No, I think it's probably like 2.5 hours away.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, it's not bad. No,
take a road trip.
Homie, I'm on it. There's so many places I need to go. It's endless. But so in 1920 or 22, this man was hunting for deer in the fall, and he was like in this area is it's very like woodsy and creaky, and he sees this object like in the sky and hears it. It's like a loud noise, and he's like, well, that's weird. Anyways, he like kind of like, you know, goes back to hunting. Then he sees this object cruise over the trees and kind of like land, you know, I don't know, like 300-400 yards away. And then he's like, what in the hell was that? I mean, this is like 1920. And then a couple seconds go by and he sees what looks like a humanoid creature flying, like flying past him, like a flying wing humanoid type, or like something like a, with like, or like rockets on his back, but it zooms past him. And it was like burning the snow as it went by. And this case was actually discovered by Jacques Vallée at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in the 1970s. He had access to a bunch of files because he was working with J. Allen Hynek, and he was the one that discovered this case. And so the military had a copy of this case.
So, oh, my God.
Yeah, it was investigated in some capacity.
Yeah. So is that it? Is that... Don't tell me that's the end of the story.
That's the end of the story.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and they may have done follow-ups with them, but that's all the file said. It was just basically that, you know, and it's wild and awesome. But, like, it's a good example kind of how a lot of people think UFOs started with, like, the Roswell era. Or, like, there was, mystery ships in, 1800s. But then, it just took a break, you know, after, like, that era for 50 years. Until Kenneth Grant and Roswell. That's totally inaccurate. So there was definitely sightings happening. I don't know how much because I don't think a lot of these sightings were documented terribly well, but there are. I mean, you can go into, Jacques Vallée's Dimensions book and find a bunch of these cases from the early 20th century, or pick up any John Keel book. He'll definitely have examples of that.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, the thing I do like about that story, I'm sad there wasn't more to it because I was like, I was really getting into it there.
Me too.
Thing that I do like about it that to me gives it some validity is the fact that, like, there is no big climax to that story. There is no, like, he never fought it, you know, it never did anything. It just flew by. And it was like, he's not the hero. The witness isn't the hero of the story.
Yeah.
It just happened. And that's it. Mm-hmm. And then it goes away.
That's an interesting thing to point out, Sam, because I do think if you look at a lot of these encounter cases, they have, like, you know, like how we think of movies and books into like a three-act structure or a play or whatever. These encounters almost tend to be like work on such a nonlinear fashion without they have a beginning, a middle, and then never an end. There's never a clean, tidy, you know, tied in a bow resolution. It's just like, holy cow, this happened. Now what do I do with my life? Yeah. You know, like,
right.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, as if it was it was going to just happen anyway. You just happened to be in the way.
Absolutely.
You know? Like it was something that happened near you, not because of you, you know? And like,
right.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because I mean, like, I'm not trying to be play devil's advocate, but I do sort of think that we are inextricably linked to whatever this phenomenon is, and that I don't necessarily know if there's a UFO without someone seeing it.
Oh,
I think they're there. They're a display for us to witness. That's kind of how I see it. That's, again, I have no evidence to back it up. That's just my personal philosophy. Unless I'm like, you might be right. It might have just been there regardless. You know, like, anyone could have seen it, or no one could have seen it, or it was there specifically for him to see.
If a UFO lands in the woods and there's no one there to see it, well then,
I kind of think UFOs and all this stuff is not necessarily I feel like the better question than what are they and what do they want is what do they have to do with our reality? Like, I think they might be something more that's just around all the time and just plays with us, and, you know, it shows itself as a 9-foot-tall Bigfoot in a forest sometimes, or your dead granny in your closet.
Granny.
Yeah, man.
So you're saying that, like, you believe that this could be a link between ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, like, this could all be kind of part of the same thing.
I don't believe that, because I don't actually believe in any of this stuff. I feel like there's something to it, you know, but I don't have a belief system at all wrapped up with any of this stuff. But, like, I think there are so many patterns, because if you see a light in a house, we call it a ghost. If you see a light in the sky, we call it a UFO. If you see a light in the forest, well, we call it, you know, a symptom of the Sasquatch or a fairy light. So if you take the same object and put it in different locations, we have different labels for it.
I like that.
Yeah.
And those in if just taking light phenomenon, to me, almost seems like the raw, naked form of whatever this is. And that light phenomenon will turn into whatever you want to see. It will take archetypes from our collective unconscious and put like a Dolly-esque spin on it and show you something crazy.
Oh, cool.
I obviously have zero evidence to stand on that. That is just a way I like to think about it, because what I like to try to, the reason why I'm an all-purpose weirdo and look at all this stuff is because I like to do, you know, my own little form of comparative analysis and say, like, what is the similarities between a ghost encounter, a UFO encounter, and a cryptid encounter? Well, it turns out there is a lot, a lot. It's just kind of, there's so many, like, you know, like Jenny Randles has this great term, you know, she coined called the Oz effect. And the Oz effect is kind of this feeling, this bubble of unreality where things go quiet, just like in a Bigfoot encounter, in a UFO encounter, in a ghost thing. And the world around you seems weird. You feel like you've stepped into kind of like a dream. And I think that when people, at least just reading reports and talking to witnesses, that is kind of a symptom from having these encounters. It feels like you're in some kind of dreamy type world where the rules are more dream logic than how the rules are in our reality.
So is what you're saying is that this might be something that taps into our subconscious and then pulls from that a form to take to present itself to us. So kind of like Jodie Foster at the end of Contact when the alien showed up as her dead dad, like that?
I don't think we can count it out. Yeah, I Greg Bishop, who is a mentor of mine in the UFO world, he's really been impactful on me and just a really great friend. He has this theory, it's called the co-creation hypothesis. And that is what, and it's really kind of getting into what Carl Jung was talking about, and even Valet to a certain degree. And that is whatever we're seeing, it does borrow, maybe not necessarily from our personal subconscious, but our collective unconscious. Because, like, you know, Jung and, you know, Joseph Campbell talked about, it's like we live in a sea of archetypes, and archetypes are very important to mythology, folklore, and to society around us and culture around us. So why wouldn't a phenomenon that actually has really no set appearance not use our archetypes to show itself? So I just think, his theory, the co-creation hypothesis, can't be proved, but it's just a really good thought experiment to get us to ask better questions about this stuff.
Yeah.
Because I think we've been kind of stuck on, well, where do UFOs come from? What is Bigfoot? Is it a missing, you know, like, what is it? What does it want? And I feel like maybe we should reframe these questions into something that, why are these things similar? How does it affect the world around us? How does it change our worldview? Does it impact religion? Does it impact, like, small town societies and cultures? You know, do people think it's a harbinger of the end times? I think how it affects people is what we can study. I think, like, studying propulsion and, like, demanding the government tells us all the answers is a real waste of time. That's how I have no interest in the disclosure movement. I think of all forms of activism, it's just not one I want to put any energy into. Yet I want to talk to witnesses, because I learn infinitely. Like, even just in Van Meter, where I met both of you, I was the best part about it after my lecture is so many people came and told me stories about from Nebraska, and I was blown away. And now I have like five people I'm in contact with, and I'm getting their stories, and now they're getting the stories from the people who they were with when they saw this UFO land in clearing when they were camping when they were kids. So I'm learning way more talking to a witness for 15 minutes or getting like listening to a government congressional hearing. I learned almost nothing from that, but I learned a ton from talking to a witness, you know what I'm saying? So I feel like people who are just putting all their apples in the disclosure basket, I'm like, you're going to be waiting a long time. So, and that's kind of the fun thing. It's like, I think we can take it into our own hands.
That's very true.
Like, I always try to get people excited about, as opposed to like obsessing about kind of these legendary cases, which I do too. I love like the Loveland Frogman monster. I love the Joe Simonton case. I love all these high strange cases, and I read about them and I cherish them and I want t-shirts of them all. But what I do think we all should be doing is taking the small microcosm around us and where we live and reading about the history. How did, like, you know, people settle there? What indigenous tribes were there before? What were their traditions? And, like, you know, what do people in this town, like, what's the predominant religion? What's the belief system? What do people eat? You know, I think all these things are really contributing factors to helping us maybe understand and ask better questions about all this stuff.
I love that.
No, I was just going to say, you know, when you talked about when they borrow stuff from us and it just sort of manifests mm-hmm. in front, like, and I know this is totally bonkers, but now I'm sitting here thinking.
No, I love bonkers. Okay,
now I'm sitting here thinking about, like, the correlation between that and, like, AI art, you know, like, where it's like, it just sort of creates something from nothing, from, like, our, like, what we typed in, you know, or whatever, and it just makes mm-hmm. art.
Dude, you just hit upon something that I was just having this conversation with someone about last week. Because, I mean, Valet has been saying forever, even before the 3D printer was made, that these things may just print on demand how they want to appear to a certain group of people instantaneously. Yeah. And basically, you just gave an amazing example of where we're at technologically speaking, because I have messed around with Midjourney. And in about 2 minutes, I can type something in and it will get almost pretty damn close to what I had envisioned. Not all the time. You have to fiddle with it a little bit, but we're in the infancy of this technology. Yeah. So you're mm-hmm. totally right. I think AI is a great example of how this stuff might manifest.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, maybe the whatever the phenomenon is types in, like, oh, I'll be like a 9-foot-tall Sasquatch, you know, standing next to a UFO. Boom.
Yeah.
And it's going to look different because, you know, like, because AI, like, it doesn't perform the same way, you know, like, it kind of is dependent on the user. So, wow, that's a great comparison.
Good job, Sam.
I did something.
Proud of you. So, Sam, weren't we talking to author John LeMain? Wasn't he saying about, you know, if it was fake, how he had to go through the newspaper articles and see where the article was actually printed, because it was printed on, like, the comic side of the page, he knew that that was going to be fake.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And not to trust it.
Yeah. 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 Okay. So, yeah. So who you're talking about that. So it's John LeMay and No Torres. That's his co-author. They do a series of books called The Real Cowboys and Aliens. Okay. And what they do is they take old newspaper articles and repurpose them into books, you know, where they cover, you know, the various stories of, you know, cowboys and pioneers and frontiersmen and whatnot from way back in the day, you know, encountering various, you know, spacecraft or whatnot. And, what he said was in these books, like when they were looking through the newspapers, if it appeared on sort of a jokes page or, you know, like the more lighthearted kind of stuff, they, you know, it was always kind of, you know, it was known to be fake, whatever, you know. However, what we're talking about here, these airship sightings.
Were they front page?
Yeah, I believe they were. I believe these were like front page news stories like across the country, weren't they?
I actually don't know. I really truly don't know. I mean, because all the accounts I've seen have never been the real papers. They've just been accounts that have been reproduced for books.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. And they're only going to show the article. They're not going to show the whole page in context, you know. I get that.
Aside from the Nebraska ones, no, I have actually seen copies of the new old newspaper, like reprints of the copies of those newspapers, so I can account for those. But I don't remember if they were in the front page or not. You know, it was hard for me to tell. But yeah, it was big news. Yeah. I mean, 600, you know, holy hell.
Well, I mean, if it's spreading that fast across the country, I mean, like, because like you said, this was like daily at one point, like just moving around.
It was. I mean, like, for 2 years, this is just like you were hearing about so many of these. So.
And Steve, what do you think about the speculation that the airship sightings come to an end with the crash in Aurora, Texas? What do you think about that?
I didn't know they did.
Oh, no. Wow, look at that.
Like, what do you mean? But I mean, the phenomenon of UFOs didn't stop after Aurora, as far as I know.
No. All I mean is that, so we got this big flap where these things are being sighted like every single day, just boom, 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 boom. And then all of a sudden in mid-late April.
1897.
Yes. There is this crash where one of these airships was said to smash into the windmill of a farmer in Aurora, Texas, and his name was Proctor. Mm. It smashed into his windmill and then crashed. And then supposedly the pilot did not survive and was buried actually there in the Aurora, Texas cemetery. It was buried right there. And then they took some of this metal and they cast it into, there was a well there on the property. They threw it in there. And then supposedly that was kind of the end.
They were seeing him up to 1903, I believe.
You know what? Yeah, you know what? You're correct. Let me rephrase that. I guess what I meant to say was it wasn't necessarily the end of the sightings. It was just sort of the end of that flap. They just weren't seeing him as often after that point.
If they were seeing him really heavily in the late 1800s, yep. But they were still being reported for about, yeah.
And then, years later, that same, that property, the guy that would get that property, he would eventually fish that metal out of the well and supposedly developed some bizarre form of arthritis that he attributed specifically to handling that metal that he had fished out of that contaminated water.
Right. Well, I mean, as far as I know, I feel like the Aurora is kind of put into the basket of where the Aztec crashes, where it's like, interesting story, but that metal was found to be totally mundane and of earthly origin. And the story is pretty thin for something so dramatic to happen. I mean, like, it's a great story. I love it, but I just don't like with all these stories, I don't know if they're true. So I like Roswell, like I don't believe that Roswell was anything high strange. I think it was definitely seemed like a
military
test. Yeah. But so I'm highly skeptical of a lot of this stuff. And I would kind of put Aurora in one of those things where like, love the story. It's a great story, but I would need to see something even sort of compelling or just a little bit compelling to take any kind of like, or to take it seriously, I suppose.
Steve, what's your address so people can send you hate mail?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Well, no, I mean, I'm just being honest though. I don't like know how, I mean, like Aurora is a great story. In fact, I have a friend named Daniel and he was a colleague of Jim Marks and he totally believes that there's something to the Aurora case, you know, and I've talked to him about it, but when he presents, you know, and he knows Jim Mars, who wrote about it more than anything. I believe he lived in Aurora. I just don't know. Like it's hard. It's hard. It's a hard one because it's such a, I mean, if a craft crashed, there's such very little documentation of it. Like it doesn't seem like it just didn't, there's a couple like small news stories about it, but I don't know. It's tough. Like there's a crashed UFO case the same year in Binkelman, Nebraska, supposedly. But we now found out years later that it was a newspaper hoax.
Wow.
Admitted to by the county. You know, it was just because it was a slow news day. So, you know, and like in Nebraska, another thing in 10 years later, and I think it was 1907, they were hoaxing a lake monster in Lake Alkaline in Nebraska. Well, that turned out to be the guy who did it was a known con man. So, you know, a lot of these things you just have to, you know, sort of take with a grain of salt. To me, what I find interesting about the airship, because you could say that about any of these airship stories, that of course, well, prove it. I'm like, I can't. But there is a pattern and a motif to these things. And they were reporting them so frequently in so many different areas. And there were so many patterns and commonalities between it that I think there might be something there. You know, like I just don't know what it is. And I couldn't tell you which case is the one that, you know, we should all believe. But I think just because of the volume of sightings and experiences that there is something to be paid attention to. But like, I hear you, man, with your Aurora. I'm not trying to be a negative Nancy, but, you know, or a negative Nathan. But I just, you know, I want to believe it, but I just honestly don't, you know, I guess.
Now do people still see airship like things in the sky? Or are we just seeing, you know, Tic Tacs and metal saucers?
No, people have, in fact, I contest that the cigar-shaped craft is maybe the most consistent thing that has been seen for the last 150 years. To be honest, because you still hear reports of them today. You heard about them in the 90s, 80s, 70s, 60s, and then you heard about them in the late 19th. And actually, I have never thought about it until you just asked that question. But yeah, I do. People do see, and now it's not like the most common, but people definitely see the cigar shaped graph still. So that it.
But no, like wouldn't ship.
No, I mean, not that I mean, like maybe they do. You know, I definitely don't like check
sightings
up on like some of the repositories for like the latest sites. I don't do that.
You're not that much of an expert.
I'm not. I probably tend to like look into more encounter cases with, you know, more direct face contact with high strangeness. I suppose a little more interesting to me because the stories are more weird and fun.
Yeah.
So what would you say is the strangest aspect of this entire thing? Of the airship sightings? Like, what's the weirdest thing came out of this?
The weirdest thing to me is, well, I mean, there's two weird things. One, it doesn't sound like it, at the time we had any kind of technology that was could do this kind of stuff. Could have metal without wings flying in the air, you know? And sometimes you did see submarine things with wings. So I don't want like that. You just saw such a variance of different craft. So there definitely were ones with wings, but there were ones without. It doesn't seem to me that, you know, at least in as far as we knew back then, that we had anything that could do that. Second, I would say when you hear about these, the encounters with these occupants who were driving these crafts, it just parallels a lot of the high strange elements of the, you know, 20th century ufology, where they're giving them money to go get, you know, errands, or they were constantly asking for water, like buckets of water. And just, they were like saying really confusing things. Oftentimes how UFO occupants did in the 60s and 70s, where they would ask a question and then basically they were given an answer and they would say the answer is wrong. And then they would have to say like, anyway, we're going to Cuba. Have a nice day. You know, like it was so bizarre and absurd and surreal. So that's always the aspects, the weird and absurd parts of high strangeness. To me, I don't know why I believe this, but to me, it's where I feel like we can learn the most because it's just so common with all this stuff. With all the weird stuff we love when we talk about, there is just such a high weird aspect to it. And that's while people want to throw it away and just say like, oh, that's just a weird residue we don't understand about it. Is it? Or is part of like the whole point of them showing themselves to us is to make us, to blow us away with like absurd and funny stuff so we remember it and it makes a big imprint. I don't know. It's just thought experiments. I like to talk about it out loud.
Well, sometimes I feel like this stuff is like the weird stuff like that. In those cases, like it's them just trying to blend in.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, this is what they do. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Go get some water. They drink water. Right. Get water. Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Like, here's some money. That's, you use this. Here's your money.
Well,
go get us oil and water and some crackers. Yeah. Yeah. They'll be gone for 5 minutes. They're fine. You know, like, I don't know. I mean, it's like a child, like distracting them with the toy. Like, hey, go do this thing.
You're exactly right, Sam, because I mean, there's so many cases of them almost trying to act human, but there's something like off about it. One of my favorite cases is what Keel writes about as these two men in black, they're reported in this diner and they both ordered Jell-O, but they stared at the Jell-O and didn't know how to eat it. And they ended up using a fork.
That's wrong.
You know what I'm saying? It's like they're almost there. They're like almost human, but there's something slightly weird that's just off about it.
It's like Musk or Zuckerberg. They look human, but we know. We know.
Exactly. And so, you know, like even like the Joe Symington's.
Yeah, the pancakes.
Yeah, the space pancakes we all love. Well, that's like a human thing to be like to offer food and to maybe like, you know, offer a baked good to somebody as you know, who just did a favor for you. So it's like, it's almost like a human gesture, but they do it in a way where it's like, huh? That's so weird. and that goes back to fairy lore. I mean, like all the way back to fairy lore, not fairy tales, fairy lore. They food offerings is such a key role and a key motif with the Fae. So, and the Fae is just, you know, to me, it's the same thing as, you know, UFO occupants, just, it was just a different time frame, so they called it fairies.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, if you're talking about something that's sort of from an alternate reality, alternate dimension, alternate whatever, whatever that is, Yeah, it would make sense. It, like, depending on, you know, the, I mean, it kind of feel the same where it is this sort of weird off, like, ah, it's close. It's, you know, but not quite, you know, like.
Exactly. And that, I wonder, is part of it. It's like, we don't want to get it all the way right.
Yeah.
But we want to get like a C plus in convincing humans that we're normal. You know what I'm saying? And you're like, yeah, they can kind of pass for normal, but they're not. You can just tell, you know, like.
Yeah.
Even how they talk and how they communicate, down to how they look. I mean, with, you know, Men in Black reports and a lot of the Kiel books, they look like humans, but also they're off. Like, they have no eyebrows, and like sometimes they'll, like, ears are like tiny, and just like it looks like they're wearing lipstick, and they have like weird, like, kind of olive green skin. You know, it's just, there's something not totally human about mm-hmm. them.
But like I said, they hand them pens and they don't know what to do with them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Or they got like wires like coming out of their socks, and like, what the hell is yes. that?
Like, dude, yeah. I mean, you saying that, it's things like that, wires coming out of your socks, that really excite me. That is the, like, the, I'm super interested in the granular details of High Strangeness. And like you said, yes, being handed a pen, you don't know what to do with it, all that kind of stuff, I love, because I also feel it's the most important details of this stuff. I really do.
And not gonna lie, I gotta tell you guys, I have had an absolutely great time tonight. This has been a blast.
Me too. This is so fun.
Steve, where can people find you?
Okay, well, you can find me at Bergmaster5000 on social medias. And then you can find my podcast, High Strangeness, H-I, Strangeness, on Apple and Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts.
And what about your movies and TV shows?
Yeah, well,
all that stuff.
I'm allowed to talk about that stuff starting today again. So yeah, you can, I mean, I don't know, like, there's been a strike going on, so I have nothing new to promote. I just got done doing a movie called Who's Watching, but I don't know when that will be coming out or what the deal is with that. You just kind of do it and then they never tell you anything. But yeah, you can check out my IMDb page, I suppose, and find stuff I've been in and watch it if you want. Some is good, some is bad. That's the life of an actor.
Can you be more specific with which ones are bad?
I cannot, so I can skip it. No, I need people to hire me again.
Well, this has been a blast. Thank you so much for being on.
Absolutely. Thanks, Laura. Thanks, Sam. I appreciate it. It was good fun hanging.
Well, you know what? You know, I got to say.
Yeah?
Yeah, Steve, that guy, he's a lot of fun. Look, I gotta say, he's a lot of fun.
He is a lot. You know what? He's funnier than you.
No.
You know what? When we met him at the Van Meter Festival.
Yeah.
In Iowa, we really got along, all three of us. And you know what? I was laughing more with his jokes than yours.
Okay. Look. I just need to point this out.
Yeah.
Every single time we bring up Steve Berg.
Yeah.
You always say that you think he's funnier than me, as if you were trying to hurt me with your words, you know? And I'm just going to say this. I'm just going to say this one time to you, Cram, and that is this. If you are going to come for the king, you better kill the king, okay? Because I'll tell you, I had three older sisters growing up, so there ain't jack shit you can do to hurt me, okay? Now, I'm not going to lie. The guy shines like a light, like he's lit from within, okay? And I get it. You're probably Wild Wise Hollywood vibe, all right?
A little.
Well, yeah, sure, a little. But look, I got to say, I actually kind of feel bad that George missed that whole damn thing. I feel a little
bit. Yeah, a little.
So, where's Steve at? I've got, you said I've got my screenplays. I'm ready. Let me bounce these off you guys. Some of them are dramas. Georgenheimer, about a naive lizard man in the swamp who invents the nuclear bomb. And that leads directly into George versus Kong. I got George Wick. There's four of them. I'm just a lizard man, and then the gangsters kill my Bigfoot friend, and then I just take down the mob, and it's like I'm in the desert, and then horses and bulletproof. I've got so many here. Mm-hmm. He's got to take one of them. A Georgie, about a plastic lizard man. He's a toy. He's a toy, and he somehow enters the real world. I haven't seen. And he takes down the patriarchy. My favorite, it's the Shin Lizard's List, but a young lizard in wartime, we filmed it in like black and white. It's really heavy.
George, these titles kind of sound familiar. Did you...
All the best stories in history evoke a sense of nostalgia.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's because they're just so relatable.
That makes sense.
Trials and tribulations of a young lizard man is universal. Universal.
I got a little bad news.
Where's Steve at?
Steve left. Yeah.
What?
We interviewed him. I don't know where the hell you were. We interviewed the guy for like an hour.
What?
I don't know where you went.
What?
I don't, look. If
oh.
Oh my God, stop crying. Just hold on. Look, if you run really fast. If you run really fast, you might be able to catch him in the driveway.
Oh. Sam.
Just a second, Laura. Just a second. If you run really fast, you might be able to still catch him outside in the driveway. But you gotta hurry up. Get going. Come on, grab your stuff and go. Go.
I'm just gonna run to his car. Yo!
Look, I don't have the heart to tell the guy that it was a Zoom call and that he wasn't actually physically here, okay?
No, that's so sad. Why are you doing that to George?
Now I get to look out the window and watch him run around to all the cars outside and thinking, like, hoping each one's him. It's fun. Hold on. Oh, there he goes. Look at him. Oh, God. Oh, God. He's just wailing. It's sad. He's like a lost puppy. I can just hear him crying. I can hear him out in the... He's just calling his name from the driveway. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Oh, I feel bad.
I know. It's really sad. My neighbors are going to be very upset with me. Hold on. He's back.
Oh, no.
Oh, you didn't catch him, huh,
no,
buddy?
No. Oh, he's like, John, you should totally hang out. But he said to be somewhere. He's just so busy right now.
Yeah.
He's going to... Call me later.
Okay, yeah, that's cool.
Totally, that's cool. Totally.
That's totally what happened. Yeah,
that's what happened. Totally.
Yeah, you know what? That's cool, dude. Yeah, you know what? You did good. You know what?
What?
Maybe I can take you out for some ice cream, huh? How about that?
Oh, look, I want some ice cream.
Oh, what's your favorite ice cream?
Lizard berry.
We'll get you some lizard berry.
Lizard berry with an L.
Yeah, we'll get you some lizard berry.
You gotta say it right.
We'll get you some lizard berry.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Whipped cream on top?
With some whipped cream on top, huh?
You can't get a waffle cone.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, buddy.
Okay.
We'll get you a waffle.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I'm sorry what I said about the airships. They're totally cool.
I know, buddy. They're not Bigfoot cool, but they're cool. All right.
Sorry.
Aw. All right, you guys go enjoy your ice cream, and we will roll the credits.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Laura.
You're welcome. I'm sorry, George.
Okay.
Come on, buddy, let's go.
Why don't you let me see you?
I'm sorry, come on.
Make it two scoops.
I am not financed for two scoops. He is getting one scoop. Okay, can I have two scoops? God damn it, Jesus.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
You can find us at creepyacres.com and you can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. Also YouTube, and we're on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, which is now called X, Threads, and we have merch at tpublic.com.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And as always, hey, keep it creepy.